You know, great art tends to have themes. There's things that we put on canvases or put on movies or write down in books that have been placed in us. And the idea of a hero, the program, the system by which a hero emerges is so consistent if it's a comic book or a movie or whatever. And we just saw the classic paradigm right there. A normal person who's weak. Peter Parker, a little loser boy, you know, he's skinny, nothing powerful, people are tripping him. And then all of a sudden, something happens and transforms him, and he transcends his lowly circumstances and becomes strong and is a hero. And this is the paradigm that all heroes really follow to one degree or another. How many of us in here are fans of the television show Heroes? How many of us? Anybody, you know, save the cheerleader, save the world. You know, you have this little dinky cheerleader that's a hero. Yes, she's a hero. She's got incredible powers. You got people like a geeky Japanese guy who can bend time. The greatest heroes that inspire us are people that don't look like they're all that much. They're Bruce Banister and becomes Hulk. Lowly beginnings and all of a sudden becomes strong. This is the paradigm of God. This is the paradigm of the ultimate hero, who is Jesus. The reason why these themes continue to come out is not because people are mimicking the previous hero paradigm. It's because this is a paradigm that is set in eternity. It's a paradigm that all of us strike to. I'm not going to be able to prove empirically everything I say today, but I'm telling all of us, and I want you to consider whether or not you were actually born into a cosmic conflict wherein a hero is sent from outside to you. That's what Christmas is. A hero has come to you. Yesterday, Libby and I were kind of doing a little sleeping in on Saturday morning, and we were spooning in bed. Yes. Yeah, we were doing some spooning, and she said, you know, why don't let's get in the Christmas spirit today. Why don't we go shopping? And it's like, Christmas spirit, I want to get the Christmas spirit, but why don't we pray together this morning? Why don't we do that? And we laughed, and like, oh gosh, well, what is that? It's so funny, you know, for a Christmas spirit today, we think we got to go to Kenwood and go to the mall and stand in line so that we see garland and trees and all that stuff. It's like, there's where the Christmas spirit is, cutting in line and being angry with people, buying things, consuming things. You know, where did this come from? Christmas is not about those things. Christmas is about a hero who's come from outside. And the entire Bible is a book filled with conflict. It's an entire book filled with tension. If you want to find peace and happiness, don't read the Bible. Because it shows you can find peace and happiness in the midst of your conflict, because the Bible is about conflict. It's one conflict after another. Adam and Eve in conflict with Satan, with Lucifer, comes the serpent. And then in conflict with their siblings and other people. Nation of Israel in conflict with Egypt. Then in bondage by Assyria, by Persia. You've got these kings that are fighting with one another in the midst of the nation of Israel. It's all this conflict that's happening. All the while, they're waiting for a Messiah. They're waiting for a Messiah that's to come. They're waiting for the hero that is going to set them free from all of their bondage and everything that's going wrong. And the Jews waited and waited and waited for this. And today still, our world is a world of conflict. You know, Rodney King said, can't we all get along? No. No, we can't all get along. There's regular, consistent conflict in our world and also in our lives. Last week, Vivian Bechtold, who was on stage with the round kind of around the campfire circle talking. We were interacting between services, and we were laughing about the first couple of years when Crossroads started, how her and I were in major conflict the first couple of years, not all the time, but regularly, because she as a volunteer headed up things like my compensation. In fact, still to this day, a team of volunteers set my compensation. I've never set anything around my compensation. It's all volunteers that figure that out by a variety of measures. And the first couple of years, because of my background in churches, I'd always gotten, or at least in my opinion, abused financially by churches. In fact, one time we were waiting for our first daughter to come along, and I went into work one day and found out that the board the night before had cut my salary in half. Half! Kind of the old Eddie Murphy line. Half! Just half! I'm like, whoa, how did this happen? Just thing after thing that was difficult. So when I came and Vivian would say, we're going to do this or that, I would immediately read it the wrong way. And there would be conflict. There would be tension. I was hearing a story about a woman who's been involved with our South Africa stuff. She's an African-American woman that did some stuff on the very first trip to Mamelodi. And in her work, she's doing some measuring of online tutoring tools for math. And so she just goes online and she's doing some stuff. And somebody out in the internet world interacting with her on questions with math. And she after she had a question answered, she was struck very, very deeply because she realized it's the first time she had ever asked a math question where she wasn't dishonored. Because as an African American in her background, when she would ask a question, a math teacher would assume that she wasn't paying attention, that she was stupid, that that was her background. She experienced racism in the classroom. And now when someone can't see her skin, she got answered her questions in a totally different way. There's conflict that we all are a part of, and it's because there's conflict in the spirit realm. There is a spirit realm. That's why we're drawn to things like psychic lines. That's why we're drawn to paranormal things on Discovery. That's why when we go into a room that's dark, we wonder if there's something in there. Something goes bump in a night. We're wondering, was that there's a dream, and we think that God is behind it. It's because we're not physical beings who are interested in the spiritual. We're actually spiritual beings that have physical properties, and we don't understand it all, and we don't agree with one another, but we sense intuitively, this is planted in us, that there's something happening, there's something going on in and around the story of Christmas. And here is the story of Christmas as it comes to some of the main characters I'm going to talk about today. We're talking about a mother, Mary. We're going to talk about angels. We're talking about Mary, and we're going to talk about heroes. And here's the way it starts in the book of Luke, chapter 1, verse 28. The angel went to her and said, "Greetings, you who are highly favored. The Lord is with you." Mary was greatly troubled at his words and wondered what kind of greeting this might be. But the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you're to call him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end." "How will this be?" Mary asked the angel, "since I am a virgin." And the angel answered, "The Holy Spirit will come on you. The power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God." Now, there's a lot going on here, but let me just touch on a few of these things. We see here, angels fight, mother's birth, and heroes save. That's what we see here, what we see in Christmas. Angels fight, mother's birth, and heroes save. You know, when someone talks about seeing an angel today, whether we hear about it on television or someone tells us about it, most of the time we tend to go, "Oh man, sounds like such a nice experience. How come I can't ever see an angel? I want to see an angel. I want to have nice warm tingles go up and down my spine. I'd love for that to happen." I don't know what kind of angels people are seeing when they talk about these accounts, but they're not the angels that are in the Bible. Because the angels that are in the Bible, almost always, immediately when someone sees them, they have to say, "Hey, oh, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, fear not." Why? Because angels will jack you up. That's why. They are not these little fat white babies with rosy cheeks who like have little bow and arrows trying to shoot through people. They're not. They're warriors. Regularly in the Bible, they come with swords. They're warriors. They're God's warriors that are waging a war, His war in the cosmic realm that affects us right here today. Angels are like God's Navy SEALs. There's a cosmic conflict that is happening, really, and is taking place. And so when this angel comes to Mary, his name is Gabriel, he's an angel, he tells her that the hero is coming. The Messiah is coming. The one who's been prophesied, the one who's been ready to take us out of bondage is coming. And there's been all kinds of types or figures or precursors to this ultimate hero. There was Moses who delivered the nation of Israel out of Egypt. There was all these different folks that all had a mirror or an element in common with the ultimate hero, the ultimate one who was to come. Jesus, we are born in the midst of a cosmic conflict where people and forces own us that God wants to rescue us from and deliver us from. Things own us like materialism, like selfishness, like gossip, like the desire to do what we want and not what God wants. How often do we sit in a place like this? And we just see if what is being said is something we agree with, because that's the most important thing to me, what I agree with, versus maybe there's something outside of me that wants to get my attention. Angels fight. The angels come and say, "Hey, this is the beginning of everything changing." And Mary is the recipient of the seed of God into her womb. She is what's been known as born a virgin. Now, you know, the Bible is really not interested in painting a believable story. It's interested in painting history. If it was interested in painting a believable story, it wouldn't say Mary was a virgin when Jesus was born. I mean, they're not stupid. They understand how babies happen, you know? They understand, they know full well that to put this story in here, which is one of a kind story, it's totally crazy because we talked a few weeks ago, in religions and spiritualities, God is always separate. God is always distant. This is tied into Platonic philosophy as well, that there's a spirit realm, a non-material realm, which is the higher, more important realm, and the physical realm, the earthly realm, is the unimportant realm. And the gods never come here. They stay away. But God doesn't believe that because He's created the physical realm. The physical realm is just as holy and just as spiritual as the immaterial realm. And the angel comes to Mary and says, He is going to place Himself inside of you. God with us, Emmanuel. We sang that song earlier, Emmanuel. The hero is not going to give us instructions. The hero is actually going to come with us, God with us. Now, it is a big leap, obviously, to believe that Mary gave birth when she never had sex. If my daughters come to me and say, guess what, Dad, I'm pregnant, and it was God who did it. I'm not going to believe them. I'll just say it very clearly. I'm not going to believe them. But if God would decide to do that, He could. People debate and scream now till the cows come home about whether or not the earth was created in 6 literal days or 6 epochs that were long, long and millions and billions of years. And people kind of debate here and there. But can we all at least agree that anything that is intricate, any creation has to have a creator, right? Our cars, they had a creator. There had to be somebody who designed the car. The house that you're in. Somebody had to design the house and build the house. If you go down on your kitchen counter and you see spelled in alphabets, I love you, somebody arranged the letters in those very simple structures relative to the human body and creation. The most complex structure in the history of anything is our human body. And how we can believe that just out of mere chance, there's an electrical impulse that makes our heart go, and surgeons today still don't understand where this electric impulse comes from, what governs it, why it decides to stop, how the cells work, why they reproduce themselves, how our eyes work and flip the image through our brain to understand. I mean, the level of intricacy in our bodies is just stunning. However it happened, there had to be a creator to make this happen. And if there's a creator that could make that happen, how simple would it be to simply take one Y chromosome and just plant it in a womb? The hero comes into our world, identifying with us. The hero comes into our room, into our world, experiencing everything that you and I have experienced, including being squashed through a narrow birth canal. That is how the hero comes into our world. This is so radical and so crazy because if you were to create some beautiful epic of what a hero, an Arnold Schwarzenegger hero would look like, it might look like, you know, coming down just on a rocket ship. Superman, there's something about that. Superman comes outside in and crash lands. We still have that outside in thing that's happening, but yet he's still supernatural from the beginning. Jesus has always been around because he is God, but when he comes, he has a finite physical beginning coming through a woman, identifying with absolutely everything that we go through. In the book of Luke, chapter 2, it defines and describes what happens after he's born from Mary. It says, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Mary goes out and she's just a normal person. She's a normal working class person. Joseph, her husband, is a normal working class person who's a carpenter. And when they need to go find some place to stay, they can't go to the hotel they own. They can't pull strings. They can't make a few phone calls. These are normal people. The hero comes in through a normal way. In fact, so much so that they can't even get a room to stay in. The innkeeper says, sorry, no room for you. No room for you. You have to go out to where the manger is. Now, many of us might have on our coffee tables at home a manger. A manger is not a cute wooden structure with snow on the roof. That is not a manger. There was no snow on the roof when Jesus was around in the Middle East. I guarantee you there was not. And sheep weren't singing either. That didn't happen either. He is born into this normal existence, and Mary takes him and wraps him in cloths and places him in a manger. This is a manger. This is a modern day manger. This is a feeding trough that comes from Tractor Supply Company. It's a feeding. This is a manger. A manger was a cereal bowl for cows. Jesus is of such humble impoverished beginnings, such a normal beginning, that his first crib is a cereal bowl. His first crib is placed where cows were slobbering. Mary wraps him in swaddling clothes. Was it to create a beautiful picture of what would go on our Christmas cards? No. It was to keep the slobber away from them. Puts him in the manger. This is a hero unlike any other that has come to identify with you and has crashed into our world. Andrew Carnegie, a number of years ago, you know, obviously one of the richest men in the history of America and one of the greatest philanthropists that ever lived, he was very struck by why it was certain people would do heroic activities. It didn't make sense to him. There was a disaster of his time where there was a mine collapsing and people went in to save people out of the mine and they lost their lives. And Carnegie realized this just does not make sense why anybody would sacrifice their life. This goes against the Darwinian rule of the survival of the species. You don't sacrifice your life. It doesn't make sense in the propagation of the species. Now, maybe you might sacrifice for your own son, your own child, so that your bloodline could go on. But he saw people sacrificing for people they never knew. In fact, he noticed that there were things that he couldn't pay anybody to do, but they would do it for free if somebody else's life was on the line. And this astounded him. He decided to study this. In fact, today, if you think about watching Discovery or Animal Planet, you'll probably realize that you've never seen, at least I've never seen a mother or a father step in the way of a roaring lion and get killed to save their baby. They'll like try to ward it off to a point, but as soon as they realize they're dead, they're like, sorry, little buddy, I gotta leave you. And they take off and, you know, little gazelle becomes toast. You don't see even animals in the animal kingdom ever giving up themselves for other kinds of their own. And yet he was struck. Why is this that humans do this? Humans do this because it's part of the scene of the divine, seed of the divine story, the cosmic conflict that we have placed in us. It's part of the seed of the hero being created in the image of God that all of us have. And so we just started studying why this was and where this came from. And they found a few interesting things out. One thing that they found out for whatever reason is they've been awarding people who have done this heroic activity. Most of them, for whatever reason, were men. They also found that when somebody is identified as a hero in 1 out of 4 times, it's because they lose their life. And they also found that there's a common theme of these heroes coming from small towns. We've all heard stories about how somebody might be in New York City, or they might be getting robbed or mugged or raped, and they're screaming for help, and people hear and they don't respond at all. They just keep walking by. And sociologists and psychologists have surmised that maybe people think that it's so big somebody else will handle it. And there's not the relational aspect in larger cities as there is in many small cities where you feel a responsibility for people, where people know your name. Jesus fits every profile of what is studied by a hero. Comes from a city that is so small and insignificant that archaeologists for a long time said this is one of the reasons why we don't believe in the Bible, because there's no archaeological evidence at all for Nazareth. Nazareth. And then a few decades ago, they started uncovering tombs, and it was known and saw Nazareth on these tombs. They said, oh, here it is, Nazareth. Today you can go to Nazareth. I've been there. They have a nice, cool Art Deco Catholic church and the greatest bakery in the world right down the street. It's very, very close. Seriously, if you ever get to Nazareth, get the baklava at the bakery right down the hill. It is awesome. But you can go to Nazareth today, a very small town, 60 acres. 60 acres in Jesus' time is estimated about 480 people would live in this town. And heroes aren't supposed to come to Nazareth. I mean, heroes should come to great metropolis meccas. I mean, today we still have this feeling. If someone comes from a small town, they come from a hick town. East Bumble, small town USA, Nowheresville. We have all these demeaning names for anybody who grows up in a small town. Jesus had this going on with him in Nazareth. In fact, he would get done teaching, he would do a great teaching, and people would go, wait a minute, aren't you the carpenter's son? You come from Nazareth. And they go, what good comes out of Nazareth? No good comes out of Nazareth. Jesus fit the profile, grows up in this small town a number of years ago. Carnegie Foundation awarded one of the recipients surrounding the event in 1982 when a plane crashed in the Potomac River. And they found that people were dying of hypothermia. They couldn't get to the shore, and people were trying to get to them. They had a hard time getting to them. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a helicopter comes and lowers a life ring to a guy who takes the ring and passes the person next to him. And they take him to the safety. Helicopter comes back again, lowers the ring to the same guy. He takes it, passes it to the next person. They take him to safety. Comes back, lowers the ring, the same guy. The guy goes on to give away the ring 5 times. And the last time they come back, and the guy is gone. He's dead. And they didn't know who the guy was. Until they dragged the bottom of the river and they got 74 bodies. And only one of the 74 bodies had water in the lungs. The rest of them had died from hypothermia. His name was Arlen Williams. He was a 46-year-old bank examiner that had nothing special about him at all. 46-year-old bank examiner that had come and had saved lives. This is what heroes are like. They come out of nowhere, they do the heroic, and they die. They die. They give up their life for somebody else. In the charter for the Carnegie Foundation, the Hero Foundation, in which they give these awards, here's what it says. The candidate for an award must be a civilian who voluntarily risks his or her life to an extraordinary degree while saving or attempting to save the life of another person. The rescuer must have no full measure of responsibility for the safety of the victim. There must be conclusive evidence to support the act's occurrence, and the act must be called to the attention of the commission. Today, I'm calling to attention that there's a hero that's come for you. I'm calling to attention there's a hero that has broken into this world and has come to save you. I'm calling that attention. And sooner or later, you'll come to realize that you need a hero. You'll come to a place where you have an addiction you can't get over with your own self-help. You'll come to a place when you realize that there's stuff that you've done that justice must prevail. It's sort of like the persnickety old woman who goes into the photo shop and says, "Now do me justice." And the photographer says, "Woman, with a face like yours, you need mercy and not justice." Well, you'll come to understand that there needs to be some justice for what we're doing. Because if people did to us what we've done to God, we wouldn't stand for it. If people ignore us like we ignore God, if people go after their own self like we go after our own self, if people thumb their nose on us and dishonor us the way we dishonor God, we would have none of it. Yet we expect God to just let this go and forget it and just grade me on a curve because after all, I'm better than the loser next to me, right? Right? Well, probably not. And so what? You still have a need for justice. And God knows this because He's a just God. And so He sends a hero. He sends a hero to make things right. He sends a hero who is born in wood-like structure, who is placed in a wood-like substance. A hero who later on in his life is going to be nailed to a wood-like substance. He's going to be nailed to a cross, pierced through his wrists, pierced through his feet as the satisfaction of God's justice, as the payment to set you free. The ransom to get you and I out of bondage. The hero has come for this. And until you see this, until you accept what the hero is doing for you, you don't know God. You don't. Maybe spiritual thoughts, maybe spiritual values, but until you embrace that God lowered Himself, came down, and came after you, there's a piece of understanding God that is just not sinking. The hero wants you. The hero is calling this to attention. The book of Isaiah, chapter 53. We all like prophecies, and books go off the shelves that talk about prophecies. Here's a prophecy that changes our lives. It came hundreds of years before Jesus came around. Hundreds and hundreds of years. It was talking about the ultimate hero, the Messiah that would come. And the things that are talked about are all the things exactly that Jesus the hero encountered. Here's what it says. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to Him. Nothing in His appearance that we should desire Him. You know, Clark Kent. Nothing attracts us to Clark Kent till we become Superman. Nothing attracts us to Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man. This is the hero thing that's planted in us. Where did they get that idea? They got that idea from God. There was nothing about Jesus that was attractive. He wasn't this Arnold Schwarzenegger figure that everybody fell in love with. He was a normal-looking blue-collar dude. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering, familiar with pain. Like one whom people hide their faces, He was despised. and we held him in low esteem. People still despise him and hold him in low esteem today. Surely he took up our pain and he bore our suffering, yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities, pierced by nails, crushed by scourges. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each one has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. And yet we're still like sheep that wander after our own stuff and want to do our own thing, and yet the hero comes after us. The hero comes after and says, I'm coming after you. My purpose is you. My purpose is to rescue you, to save you, to come to you, to hold you, to take you to a new place. We'll see a lot of those bumper stickers on the back of cars. Maybe some on the back of our cars in our parking lot say something like, Jesus, 'tis the reason for the season. And oftentimes those bumper stickers are sort of like, yeah, it's not Kenwood Mall, it's Jesus. Yeah, Jesus is the reason. Yeah, well, yeah, Jesus is the reason for Christmas. But Christmas is for you. The story of Christmas is about the hero coming for you. The story of Christmas is that you are so valuable, you are so important, you are so necessary that God himself lowers himself and is a hero that comes on a search and rescue mission for you. You know how amazing how important you are? Isn't that amazing? There's a God that actually comes after you. A God that has lived the full spectrum of life. A God that even Mary didn't understand. A God that came and lived in straw and ended his life on a cross. You know, God, I'm amazed by your wisdom. I'm amazed by your creativity to think through a plan like you did. And Jesus, I'm amazed by your bravery, your heroism, your humility, your strength. I'm amazed and confounded by the whole message of Christmas. I don't know that I'll ever fully grasp it or understand it, but I know that I want you. And it's amazing that you want me. You know, there comes a time when you have to come face to face with the hero and receive what the hero wants from you. You know, you can do that when you pray sometime. You can do that just as you make a decision. And, you know, if you've never received the hero, and you want to, and it would be helpful to you. Andrew will keep playing here for a bit, and as we leave here today, if you want to just grab a little bit of wood, stick it in your pocket. Maybe you want to keep that with you for the next couple of weeks. Put it somewhere just to remind you that this, it's great to be a part of a season where there's presents given and all that sort of stuff, but this season is really about the hero coming for us. Would that be helpful? Go ahead and take a handful.